Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Says so on the shirt out in front. Big thanks to our friends at Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. Bill Cole's going to be here a little later on in the week. All of our local sponsors join us. I put an ad up in the rotation. If you are a local business owner and you love what we do, you want to be a part of the conversation, talk about your business, our country, good time to do that. Just drop me a line, ness@baltimorepositive.com. Luke is here. It is a playoffs. It's Festivus. Dude, I got like 12 strands of those purple lights. We've had no good luck with them. So I don't know whether to put them up or not. I'm like, I want to kind of sort of. And I think about the good Januaries and the bad Januaries. The good Januaries usually happen when we're on the road, backs against the wall, playing pretty well, healthy, all of that. So I think I may go with a playoff beard, although my beard is weird and my stash is trash. You know this. But at least I've got a start for a Tennessee beard here this week. And I'm not going to Tennessee this week. First off, Tennessee's a hot spot for COVID. I did hold the flight to Kansas City for next weekend. Barbecue's involved. I don't know what else to say, Luke. You know what I'm talking about, you know?
I can understand that. No question about it. If you're going to make a trip in the midst of a pandemic, it's for Kansas City barbecue, right?
I'm not going honky-tonking in Nashville. You know what I mean? Like, sure. And the game's at 1 o'clock on Sunday. And these games, we talked about this last week, during the holidays, before the holidays. It's not a lot of fun when there's nobody there. I look at it like this. I don't want to be there on Sunday if they're going to lose. And if they're going to win, I'll meet them in Kansas City or Buffalo. I guess it can't be Pittsburgh at this point. But you know, I will go next week. I think that that's the pathway I'm on. And I also thought, well, I can save the points and use it for Tampa if it goes to Tampa. You know what I mean? Like, I'm literally thinking that way. I'm thinking, like, they'll probably be in Kansas City next week if they win. Probably kind of, sort of, maybe, I mean, right? And, you know, if that happens, I'm trying to plan this out because I've already had friends say, you're not doing Radio Row, right? And I'm like, there is no Radio Row, and I'm not even thinking about that, you and I. But now that we're into the playoffs, all the weirdness of how awesome these trips have been in the past and how incredible the parties have been and this carpet ride you go on, you know, I'm willing to buy in that they're going to play a little football here in January. I don't know they're going to beat Kansas City and Buffalo back-to-back on the road, but you would have told me that they would have had a hard time beating Peyton Manning and Tom Brady on the road back-to-back week 7 years ago, right?
And I would have told you a month ago, they're going to have a hard time just getting in the playoffs when half the team's on the reserve COVID list. So, I mean, it really just speaks to how crazy this game is anyway. But then when you throw it into the midst of just such a completely unforeseen, unpredictable, unfathomable 2020, you kind of get to the point where it's like everything else in our lives at this stage. You kind of just go with it and you make the best of it. And yeah, it stinks that, you know, I mean, even going to Nashville and knowing what kind of classics the Ravens have played there, I think they're going to have 12 or 13,000 people. At least that's what they had for their last regular season home game. You know, that's barely going to make a dent in terms of an atmosphere. I mean, it's some atmosphere, but it's not, you know, 65,000 whatever name it has now. You know, I always think of it as Adelphia Coliseum, whatever it is now, but, and whatever, you know, the capacity is, it's not the same. And it's not the same here around town in terms of being able to gather, but you make the best of it. And, you know, I said this to you very early on when we were talking about the start of baseball season in late July. I kind of viewed it as, you know, sports are weird this year. It's kind of that bonus year, so to speak, I guess, because 6, 7, 8 months ago, we didn't know if there was going to be any sports this season. So we've talked about it, the league, albeit not perfectly, and no one should have expected perfection, but they pull off a regular season that was, for the most part, credible. Albeit some exceptions, the Ravens.
I like that you used that word credible because, I mean, I used Eddie Fainer many, many times. Yeah. And, you know, jumping the shark is what I said.
Sure.
That if everybody was flopping around looking like the Philadelphia Eagles did on Sunday night, they wouldn't have much of a league by week 17. So the fact that the Eagles did throw a game in front of the whole world and in front of Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, who didn't even know what to say and were afraid they were going to lose their jobs if they called it what it was, that you know, I was worried that it was going to be that because there were baseball teams this year that didn't try at all. And I... Oh.
That's not just been a two. That wasn't just a 2020 thing. That's been ongoing,
that's been all century long. Yeah. Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and look what the Eagles did. It, teams have done stuff like that before, but they were just so in the midst of the competition doing it rather than saying at the beginning of the week, oh yeah, we're going to go with our backup quarterback. I mean, we've seen that scenario play out so many times, and don't tell me teams haven't done things to try to lose within the structure of leading into the game. But when it happens in the midst of the game and it's Sunday night football, yeah, it looks bad. At the same time, I also saw the New York Giants go 6-10 this year, and Evan Engram dropped a pass that would have sealed a Thursday night win in Philadelphia earlier this year. So I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for the Giants, but yeah, it's a bad look. But to bring it back to the point is that for the most part, with some exceptions, and clearly the Ravens were part of that at one point, it's been a season that's felt like football. It had, not normal, but the competition itself, the games themselves, the players themselves, it's felt pretty normal overall. I mean, you miss 71,000 people in the stadium. There's no question about that. You miss other elements, and certainly, I mean, The Saints dealt with not having a backfield on Sunday, as they're playing for playoff positioning. So, I mean, so you had these examples, but you never got to a point where it felt like it was the XFL, right? Never got to the point where you felt like you were watching a CFL caliber product. And I say that with no disrespect to the Canadian Football League. Much love for the Stallions back in the day, but it with a few exceptions, a few games here and there, it very much felt like NFL football season. And what more can you ask for when you consider the circumstances? And now you get into the playoffs and you're talking about a 14-team field. So, you know, you have fewer players, fewer coaches involved. You're hoping there are not too many problems. I'm not going to sit here and predict a COVID infection-free postseason. I think that would be naive to expect that. But you're hoping, especially for teams who have everything invested in this at this point, that guys are more vigilant than they even were in the regular season.
I mean, look, if Derrick Henry comes down with a cough on Friday, it's not going to break my heart. You know what I'm saying? But,
sure. Yeah. I mean, there's always the competitive element as much as we all, and look, in all seriousness,
they already had it. Their whole team already had it.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that's, you know, I've had people say that to me about Lamar. I'm just like, well, I'm not sure Lamar would have, wanted to have it at the time he did, but it does speak to that. We're still talking about the competitive element through all this and understanding the serious real life aspect to this and not diminishing that. We're still talking about the competition. As I said to you, after months of us talking about what COVID was going to mean for a season or no season, the conversation has largely been able to remain on football. And look, that's a great thing when you're talking about how difficult 2020 was. So, you know, you look at the playoff field and, you know, there's some weirdness in terms of the NFC East, but that wasn't anything that you couldn't have foreseen, say, in what, October, when you looked at what the records were and what the talent level was amongst those four teams. And, you know, it's funny, as much as we talked about the 7-team field in the AFC and how the Dolphins, despite being 10-6, left on the outside looking in, which, you know, 10-6, many years get you in the tournament. But you look on the opposite side, you have the NFC East champion, Washington. And you have the Bears who get in at 8-8. So, you know, certainly a couple teams in that 14 total team field where you would say, all right, they're not really all that legitimate. But that happens quite frequently. That's not something that's terribly unique to this season. It'll happen a little bit more often as we move forward, as we're into this 17 playoff field and looking like a 17 game season next year. So things are changing on that front a little bit, but you look at this AFC, you have seven. I said five, I misspoke. Seven 11 win teams in the tournament. I mean, that's pretty rare territory right there. And, you know, probably speaks to, you know, we always talk about the parity. It speaks to there being some, not just some have nots in the AFC, but a couple substantial have nots when you're talking about Jacksonville and the Jets, especially. But you know, you're looking forward to it. And you know, if you're the Ravens, you know, Kansas City has to be viewed as the favorite. And I get it. having nothing to do with them losing on Sunday with backups, but you kind of look at their previous seven wins all by one score. So if a 14-2 team can be vulnerable, if you'll allow me to use that word, Kansas City does look a little more beatable than you normally would talk about a 14-2 team at this point. At the same time, when you're talking about a team that was down double digits in all three of their postseason wins last year on the way to a Super Bowl, they're the one. If you could talk about one team flipping a switch, Kansas City's the team that has earned the right to be able to do that. So you look at them, you know, you look at Buffalo, who is what, the Kyler Murray Hail Mary away from, I think, having not lost a game since October. That's their only loss since then, is that Hail Mary game in Arizona. You know, the Bills have looked phenomenal, and you have the Ravens. So, you know, taking nothing away from Pittsburgh, taking nothing away from Tennessee, and you know, I mean, Cleveland and Indianapolis have 11 wins. But you know, for me, I kind of look at this field, and it starts with Kansas City. But I think you know, the most threatening teams to them on paper, Buffalo and the Ravens. But you know, there's plenty of formidable teams. There are no gimmies in this field, I feel. I mean, you look at the first round, you could easily envision, maybe not easily, I'll pump the brakes a little bit. You can envision a scenario where the Browns beat the Steelers just because Pittsburgh has looked vulnerable. And hey, we saw how dangerous the Browns could be against the Ravens a few weeks back. I'd have a tougher time looking at Indy beating Buffalo in Buffalo, considering how dominant the Bills have looked, every bit as dominant as the Ravens over the last 5 weeks.
Well, this is that week where we get into, would the Bills rather have a week off after they go out and put 50 up? I mean, the Bills are rolling right now, right? And we've seen how much momentum. They look to me to be a team that wants to play football this week. You know what I mean? And in previous years, they would have had a bye, right? I mean, and part of that is they have to go out there this week and they are risking getting outed, right? As the two seed is in the NFC as well. I mean, Green Bay was playing all night, New Orleans, Seattle, they were all playing for that. And that's a little different component this year, but hey, the Ravens had a week off. They may have been better served to play last year.
Well, and we've talked about that. I mean, you mentioned that at the start of this conversation, that the Ravens, when they've made their runs, they've been playing, and they've been playing mostly on the road. I mean, that's, you know, the times where they've had a first round bye, think about it, 2006, we know what happened there when Peyton Manning and Indy came in and just gave them a heartbreaking defeat after what had to be the most, to me, the most electric week in Ravens era history in the city of Baltimore, as far as being charged up for a game. That was such a disappointment after such a thrilling week from a hype standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Flacco era, we didn't play at home a whole lot. We played we played Houston in those awful red jerseys that one time, right?
Well, I mean, then 2000, you just mentioned it, 2011, they had a first round bye. They, you know, they kind of had a so-so performance against Houston. They won, and then, you know, Lee Evans and Billy Cundiff happened the following week. So, and then we know what happened last year. So, you know, the Ravens have always been better suited. And look, it's a different team than it was in 2000. It's a different team than it was in 2012. It's a different team than it was last year, even. But they typically, traditionally, historically speaking, have been that team that has been much better served, you know, playing on the road and being counted out a little bit. And, you know, again, they're a favorite on Sunday. So let's not make it out to be that, you know, this is Coppin State going up against South Carolina years ago in the NCAA tournament. But it's certainly a case where they're not the consensus best team in the league and setting all these records and having 13 guys in the Pro Bowl and having the league MVP and the coach of the year and the assistant coach of the year. I mean, there was no shortage of accolades and praise and respect last year. This year, they lost a lot of that. Now they've gotten much of that back over the last 5 weeks. And I think, you know, you'll hear everyone say the Ravens and throw the Bills in there as well, or the teams, everyone in the AFC, including the Chiefs, are probably fearing right now, for lack of a better term. But, you know, this feels, if there is going to be, and I said this before, if there's a redemption story here, if there's a revenge tour here, it's perfect for it to start with the Titans. If you would think it would include the Steelers just because, I mean, it's Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh beat them twice this year. And of course, it would have to include Kansas City at some point. Now, is that how it ultimately is going to play out? We'll see how it plays out. But facing the Titans in the first round here, being on the road, considering the Titans are the only team that's beaten the Ravens twice in their own stadium the last 2 years. You know, if you're Lamar Jackson, if you're John Harbaugh, if you're some of the veterans on this team, to me, you're saying, yeah, you know, they came in here last January and they beat us in our own building. Let's go out there and beat them. Let's go down there and beat them and give them a little bit of a taste of their own medicine. So, you know, it's fun in that way. And it makes for a good story, and you know, we're going to see how this plays out.
You know, I watched how they did the scheduling, right? And obviously they wanted Tom Brady in a prime time, and they thought they had the Giants until the Eagles decided not to play. And the value of, you know, where does Lamar and Derrick Henry fit, you know, in the pantheon of the games that they want to get on. This triple header thing on Saturday and Sunday, these are pretty good matchups. They're pretty good teams. I think we all stand on the outside and say, this is Rodgers and Mahomes tournament. And you talk about the advantage of being the only team with a bye this year. This is their tournament to lose, right? I mean, and Vegas would say that as well. And the way those teams, the pedigree that those teams have at this point, they're expected to be in Tampa in 4 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're talking about the defending Super Bowl champion and the team that has who I think is going to be the MVP. I think Aaron Rodgers, taking nothing away from Patrick Mahomes, taking nothing away from Josh Allen, who had a phenomenal season and became a much better quarterback than I thought he was a year ago. Having that Lamar Jackson type leap where you say, okay, good quarterback. And then you look at him a year later and you say, my goodness, I mean, look what this guy's done. But you know, it's Kansas City and Green Bay at this point. They're the number one seeds. And you know, it is interesting to kind of see how the Chiefs took it with, you know, kind of resting starters. And I always say that it's easy to talk about the hypothetical of being rusty and coming out flat and needing to flip the switch, as opposed to playing your most important player and your most important players in a meaningless game, and then they get hurt. You know, you can't overcome Patrick Mahomes tearing his ACL in week 17 in a meaningless game. You can overcome a slow start, and they've proven that time and time again. So, you know, but you do look at those two teams, and it's not to write anyone else off. I mean, as I already said, I think Buffalo is extremely dangerous. I think the Ravens are dangerous. You know, I think, you know, Tennessee, if they can figure out a way to stop anyone, they have an offense that commands a lot of respect and with what Derrick Henry can do and what they're, you know, what they have with AJ Brown and Corey Davis. And that, you know, that came to fruition late in the Houston game on Sunday. I mean, that's an explosive offense. And on the NFC side, I mean, you know, I think Green Bay, as much as we've talked about the first round bye, we haven't to this point talked a whole lot about home field advantage. Home field advantage this year, not what it normally is when you're talking about either no capacity or very low capacity.
Yeah, but you got out of the car in Green Bay in November a couple years ago.
Right.
You remember what that felt like.
That's what I'm saying. That's the one environment. That's the environment, especially if you're talking about a team that, you know, that fancied itself as more of a you know, high volume passing team, a team that plays in warm weather. You know, that's a different animal.
Dude, I think Buffalo could be that too. Kansas City can be that on any given day in January too. But
sure.
I think Buffalo could be a hellhole if somehow Kansas City loses, you know, to us or whatever,
right.
You know, and we go to Buffalo for a championship game in Buffalo. That would, for 5,600, that would be something.
Yeah, I feel like the early 90s of Jim Kelly, Andre Reed and company.
I've always wanted Bruce to go to Smith. Buffalo in January again. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's funny. My earliest memories of really starting to watch NFL films was the early 90s. I was born in 83, so that would make sense. But
oh, wow. Remember the Art Shell game? The Jay Schrader game? I was at that game.
Well, you have that one. I mean, you have the comeback with the Oilers, which I know is painful for you. But I mean, you know, you think
we don't talk
Jim
about
Kelly
that.
Frank Reich, former Maryland Terp and hero there.
Going back to Buffalo this week, by the way.
But yeah, I mean, you kind of think about Orchard Park, and you know, I guess it was Rich Stadium back then, and you know, that's fun for them. I mean, and it's cool that they're at least going to, I guess, what they're going to have 4,000 fans, which you know they haven't had fans all season. You know, from a environment standpoint, from an atmosphere standpoint, it's something. But yeah, you kind of feel for that fan base. Which look, I mean, they had four straight Super Bowls in the early 90s. I mean, it's not as though the cupboard's been completely bare, but it's been pretty bare for a long time there. So
look, they got wings, they got easy access to Canada. What more do you want? You know what I mean?
But what
more can you ask for if you're from Buffalo?
But I mean, anyone who's watched that football team over the last couple of weeks, I mean, again, taking nothing away from the Ravens are as hot as anyone, but Buffalo's right there too. When you look at what their offenses look like, when you look at how their defense is played. So Kansas City, as much as we just got finished saying that, yeah, they're the team to beat because they should be the team to beat as a defending champ. And they're 14-2. And you know, this is the first game they've lost where, you know, and they weren't even trying on Sunday. So in quite some time. So you look at it and Chiefs are the team to beat, but at the very least, if you're Kansas City, Buffalo has your attention. And despite what happened in September and despite my cries time and time again, where I've basically admitted I'm not going to pick the Ravens to beat the Chiefs until I see it happen finally, because I've seen that movie too many times.
Well, Lamar used the word kryptonite. So
yeah, he said it right. So as much as I'm not necessarily going to pick that to happen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it can't happen, because I've seen a Chiefs team that, quite frankly, despite being 14-2, which sounds kind of crazy to say this, I think if you watch them on a weekly basis, you see a team that feels a little more, looks a little more, and feels
a little
more vulnerable.
Dude, they're a week seven rolled out of bed that Mahomes has to come back from three touchdowns down in January. So they've had the ability to fall asleep. I mean, it wouldn't be anything for the Ravens to go down to Nashville, put 31 up, win the game, come back home, and go out to Kansas City. Kansas City has sleepwalked. Whatever the past tense of that would be, has been caught sleepwalking.
Is it sleepwalked? I don't know. Yeah.
Sleepwalked.
And the difference with that is you fall behind to the Ravens. You know, we've talked so much about the Ravens with their inability to come back. That's been such a big narrative for 2.5 years now. But save for what? I guess Pittsburgh being down 10 in Baltimore earlier this year. And keep in mind, part of that was Lamar Jackson throwing a pick that basically set up a touchdown. Short of what happened to them in the Titans game in November, where they were banged up and you could kind of just see the defense wilted late. For the most part, the Ravens get ahead on you, you're probably not coming back, because they're going to be running the ball down your throats, and that defense is playing with a little fresher because you control time of possession. It's a great formula when you're the team that gets ahead. Now, when you fall behind, we've seen the Ravens be in trouble there. So my point is, if that were to happen to Kansas City, it's not going to be as easy for Patrick Mahomes to come back on this team as some other teams in the league, like a Tennessee, for example, who, as we saw, almost blew, they did blow a sizable lead to Houston on Sunday. So
I think we can safely say falling behind is never good.
Sure. Well, and to be clear,
even if you have John Elway or Peyton Manning, falling
behind. And that's kind of been, we've spent so much time talking about that, and I try to emphasize it every time we bring it up. The formula is not for any team to fall behind by 2 or 3 touchdowns. I mean, that when you're looking at win probability, even
no one has a good plan for that.
Right. I mean, it's not as though Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy are sitting there in the meeting room every week and saying, you know what, boys, we're going to throw this at them. We're going to fall behind by 13 points. And we got them right where we want
them. Well, the 96 Ravens tried that, as I remember.
Well, and that team also blew some leads, if I recall, but with a defense.
We hugged that out with Vinny. We played that as a part of our best of 2020. Yeah.
Which feels like it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, I can't figure much the good that happened in 2020, but Vinny stopping by was great.
That was fun. No, it was fun. It was fun for this guy who was a 13-year-old Ravens fan at the time, and all in on finally having football in the city.
I just loved that Vinny thought I was the highlight of his day. That was great.
Yeah, right.
And he meant it.
But I mean, this is, I think this is shaping up to be a fun playoff field, and it's going to be different. And I think looking at how this plays out with only one bye in each conference, and looking at how home field quote advantage plays out, knowing that it's not what it normally is, I am fascinated to see if we end up seeing a couple more underdogs get through. And I mean, the Ravens by Vegas terminology is not an underdog, but they're still the road team. And we know what that typically means when you're talking about the postseason. So it'll be fun to see it play out. And as much as you look at the NFC and you hold your nose talking about Washington, and you hold your nose talking about the Bears, who started pretty well, looked terrible and came on late, but still not a team that anyone's fearing at this point. You do look at the AFC and you say, hey, 7 teams have won 11 or more games. For me, when I kind of look at it just as a an NFL fan looking every year, I always kind of feel 11 wins is kind of the line of demarcation of, are you legitimate or not? Do you have a real chance to do some damage? And yeah, I mean, the Ravens won a Super Bowl as a 10-6 team in 2012. So I'm not saying there aren't exceptions to the rule, but 11-5 or better, that's when you kind of command your my attention a little bit more, at least. So to have seven teams in the AFC at 11-5 or better, that's pretty impressive. That speaks to what was a pretty darn competitive conference this season.
Oh, those poor Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
Well, all of my friends I have so many Dolphins friends.
Well, how about this? And not to get too far off topic with the Dolphins, because I mean, ultimately we're in Baltimore and who cares
golf
in the big picture. But boy, what a situation they're in. I mean, look, they have some talent. I mean, you look at the draft picks they have. They got the pick for Tunsil, which are going to be picking in the top five. What, third, I guess it is. What do you do at quarterback, though? I mean, have you really seen enough from Tua to forego drafting a quarterback again, knowing how important that position is, knowing that you could always trade one of them? You know, that's a tough spot to be in. I think we've seen so many times now the value of drafting a quarterback and hitting on that quarterback. And I mean, even looking at the Ravens a couple years ago, I mean, yeah, in hindsight, were they privately ready to move on from Joe Flacco? I think, yeah. I mean, they would say they weren't, but I think it was pretty evident. But even in a case like, you know, what the Packers did this year, what the Eagles did this year with, no one thought at the time that they were done with Carson Wentz, and I don't think they expected Carson Wentz to play as poorly as he did, but they love Jalen Hurts' value in the second round because of what that quarterback on a rookie contract can mean if you actually hit. So if you're Miami, I kind of feel you have all these assets. You have a nice base of talent. Can you really just say with confidence that Tua is your guy, or – do you take another crack at it and then say, well, you know what? If we end up having two quarterbacks, that's great. We'll trade one of them and go that route. So,
well, the Jets are about to move Darnold again, maybe.
Yeah, kind of sort of, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's tough. And that's where, you know, I mean, as much as you love the situations like the Ravens were in, where Lamar Jackson comes in and, yeah, wasn't perfect. You know, it didn't look like other quarterbacks, but you saw enough there from day one to say, wow, they've got something here. Now, doesn't mean at the time, doesn't mean, you know, he's going to win MVP or you're going to go 14-2 in his first full season as a starter. But there was enough to say there's an it factor here. There's something here that's unique and special. Lots of teams, you know, because you have such a poor supporting cast, or maybe you don't have the right coaching staff in place, which is one of the reasons you're picking so early.
Houston Texans.
Yeah, the Texans are a team. They have the quarterback. They don't have anything else. I mean, they just have such a problem. But, you know, if you're Miami or if you're, you know, the Jets, you know, have you really seen enough from a Sam Darnold to move with confidence, or are you going to take another crack at it?
Well, look at Tannehill. We've got to beat Tannehill this week, right? And he's a reject guy. And these guys that are going to be moved, every Josh Rosen and, you know, all these guys that are going to move around, to your point, when you have Josh Allen, when you feel like you have the right guy, and it remains to be seen if Joe Burrow is going to be that guy or not. Certainly Baker Mayfield, for all I dislike him, did enough to win to get themselves in a position to go win again this week. That's worked out a lot better than Tim Couch or, you know, any of the other Cleveland Browns, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's one thing to talk about having it, you know, you draft a guy and he's unequivocally a franchise guy. You know, where it's tricky is where you are talking about the guys who show the flashes or they have a couple good seasons and a couple so-so seasons.
Well, Jared Goff, right? I mean, he's a Super Bowl quarterback.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're going to give him away.
But, right. I mean, you know, it's tough in that way. So, I mean, that's where, you know, the Ravens, you know, as much as people will say, well, the second half of the Joe Flacco era, and I'll acknowledge that, sure. I mean, as long as we acknowledge the other variables at work there. But, you know, when you get Lamar Jackson, especially where they got him and knowing that you already had some pretty darn good talent around him and you had a coaching staff that was fully willing and eager to buy into understanding you were going to have to do things a little bit differently, you've seen how it works out. Now, ultimately, if it doesn't work out in January, if you don't win games in January and get to the promised land, there'll always be a certain yeah, but about it. But it's been a lot of fun and something where you kind of look at just how successful they've been over these last couple seasons. And know, where they've been statistically from a historical context. I mean, on Sunday with rushing for over 400 yards, Nestor, they became the fourth team to rush for 3,000 yards in a season. The Ravens are two of those teams the last 2 years. I mean, it's for as much as we question the passing game and what happens when they fall behind and what happens when they're going to have to throw the ball. And look, those are all fair questions. Let's not lose sight of what we are witnessing over these last couple of years has been incredibly unique and special from an NFL history context. And, you know, just appreciate that. I mean, let's not make the same mistake with Lamar Jackson as we did with Joe Flacco for a long time, which was, let's not dwell so much on what he isn't and let's appreciate what he is. And, you know, if you can't appreciate what Lamar Jackson brings to the table, I mean, I feel bad for you because it is an absolute treat to watch him every single week. And it's exciting when you know that he's been playing his best football since coming back from the COVID infection and knowing that the Ravens have kind of been in this playoff mode for a few weeks now. And now they, the pressure gets ramped up, but going to Nashville and have a chance for some revenge against the Titans.
The video game begins at 1 p.m. on Sunday. Luke and I will be monitoring all things out of Owings Mills all week long. If you're on our tech service, you know how good that is. It's all brought to you by our friends at Coons Ford Security Boulevard. Dennis Colazzo will be here on Thursday from 3 until 5 for Festivus Talk. Bruce Posner here on Monday morning after the game as well from 8 until 9 and again at lunchtime. Got a lot of things going on, a lot of great sponsors around here. We're into 2021 fully moved on now to our new brand. You can find everything we do out at BaltimorePositive.com. On behalf of Luke Jones, you can be found at Baltimore Luke out on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And of course, you can find me, Ness, at BaltimorePositive.com. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. It's time for Festivus. We are BaltimorePositive.com.